and she was there in the audience. And he became quite emotional, broke up a few times as he expressed his gratitude for her and for what she had done in the course of his life, and how she had provided a place to live as a single mother. She had always had food on the table, and when, as he put it, when she didn't have something to eat, the children did. And there were times that she went to bed hungry, but she always provided for him. And then he said to her, "You are the MVP." Camera shots of the audience as he was giving his speech. As you might expect, she was in tears. But you could see sitting behind her numerous people, we would say, just bawling their eyes out. As this big, athletic man expressed his gratitude for his mother. It is, of course, appropriate that such be done, not just on a day like today that we acknowledge as Mother's Day, but every day. And it has certainly been many times noted the great influence that mothers have, not just upon their families, but upon society in general. And I think it is probably accurate to say, as one looks at a society, even such as our own, that is going through a period of time in which some could, I think rightly say, deteriorating. Many of the aspects of society that are crucial to its well-being maybe are crumbling away. The blame for that, I think, has to in part be placed at the feet of mothers. Not totally, by any means, but in part. Some of the choices that women make as they raise their children have a much wider effect just beyond their family and just beyond their children, both for the good and for the bad. It is no surprise then that God in His Word would say something, often, actually many times, would have something to say about mothers and about the manner in which they ought to go about discharging their responsibilities and the influence that they ought to exert upon their children and upon others. But I think probably one surprising moment in Scriptures that relates to a mother is in Matthew the 15th chapter, in verses 21 through 28. I'd like for us to look for a few moments this morning at these verses as we reflect upon motherhood in general, or as we think about our own mothers specifically, or perhaps as we contemplate, those of you that are young women, as you maybe are engaged in raising young children at this present moment, or perhaps you anticipate at some point in the future to being a mother as well. Perhaps these verses might be reflective of some valuable lessons that would help you in that regard. As I say, this is a passage that's probably in many, many ways surprising. And verse 21 tells us that Jesus went away from there and withdrew into the district of Tyre and Sidon. Now, Tyre and Sidon were outside of the territory of Israel. So he was in an area that was predominantly occupied by those who were Gentiles. Verse 22 goes on and says, "And behold, a Canaanite woman came out from that region and began to cry out, saying, "Have mercy on me, O Lord, Son of David. My daughter is cruelly demon-possessed." But he did not answer her a word. And his disciples came to him and kept asking him, saying, "Send her away, for she is shouting out after us." But he answered and said, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." And she came and began to bow down before him, saying, "Lord, help me." And he answered and said, "It is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs." But she said, "Yes, Lord, but even the dogs feed on the crumbs which fell from their master's table." Then Jesus answered and said to her, "O woman, your faith is great. Be it done for you as you wish." And her daughter was healed at once. As I say, this is a text that I think in many respects would be quite surprising, that there would that God in His Word would provide a story in which a Canaanite woman was something of the heroine of the story. Canaanites were a particularly despicable people in the minds, even in the mind of God. When Israel possessed the promised land, they were a people that God decreed should be driven out from the land. The Israelites' possession of that land was not some act of favoritism that God showed for Israel over other nations. Their possession of the land was a judgment. It was a judgment of God against the inhabitants of the land that had lived in such ungodly ways that He determined that the time had come for the destruction of their nation. God gave pretty clear instructions to His people Israel that they were not to marry the Canaanites, and there were about half a dozen other nations that He specifically named, that they were not to give their daughters or their sons into marriage with the children of those nations, and the Canaanite nation was among them. And so if you were a Jew and you were looking at God's Word for teachings about motherhood and about positive things relating to a woman and her dealing with her children, you would not anticipate that a Canaanite woman would be the central focus of such a story. But that's exactly what happens here. But then stop and think. Who was the central figure in the story about showing love towards one's neighbor? It was a Samaritan, in the story of the Good Samaritan that Jesus told. Another class of people that the Jews had very hard relationships with. None would have ever anticipated a Jewish rabbi telling a story that illustrated great spiritual truths and using a Samaritan as the key figure in such a spiritual lesson. That's exactly what Jesus did. And so we see Him turning, I think, to an unlikely individual as the centerpiece of things that He would declare here in Matthew, the 15th chapter. And I'd like for you to think with me for just a few moments about some things that we can draw from this very poignant story about motherhood. The first thing that comes to my mind is how much this woman was willing to struggle to overcome. She was not one who would be overcome by discouragement. As we've read these verses, you see what a difficult situation she was dealing with. A daughter who was demon-possessed. There are a lot of things that we might ask, a lot of questions we might have about what this demon possession all involved and why these things happened. But one thing that can be agreed upon by all who read the accounts of the scriptures about these things is that this was a terrible, overwhelming kind of condition that people had to deal with. And this woman had to deal with the condition of her daughter. I'm impressed by the manner in which she connects herself to her daughter's condition. Her plea to Jesus was certainly a plea to save my daughter, deliver my daughter from this. But her plea to Jesus was, "Lord, have mercy on me." I think that probably is an indication of the closeness of the relationship between this woman and her daughter, as ought to exist between any mother and her child. I heard a story here just a short while ago about a teacher, a math teacher, who was going over some review with one of her students. And she called little Johnny in and she says, "Johnny, I want to make sure that you understand your fractions." She said, "Now, how many people are in your family?" And little Johnny said, "Well, there are six of us." And she said, "Okay, if your mother baked a pie and she cut that pie into pieces, what fraction of the pie would you get?" And without hesitation, little Johnny said, "I would get 1/5 of the pie." And she said, "No, Johnny, you don't understand your fractions." He said, "No, Mrs. Jones, you don't understand my mother. She's going to give little Johnny and everybody else in the family a bigger piece by not cutting one for herself." That's the kind of way in which that closeness, that attachment, that intimate relationship between mother and child ought to be. And it seems to have been so for this woman. And so much so was she committed to her daughter and to the welfare of her daughter that she would not be overcome by discouragement. She learned that Jesus of Nazareth was now in the vicinity of Tyre and Sidon, the place where she lived. Obviously, she had heard about him. Obviously, she had some conviction, if nothing more than just the desperate last-ditch hope of a mother that he could do something for her child. And so she goes to him with this tenderest of pleas, "Lord, help me." But I think we also ought to be impressed with this mother's persistence in the way that is right. The text says she came and worshiped him. This is in many ways reflective of another story, Mark the 10th chapter, that we're familiar with, perhaps even more so familiar with, that tells the story of a man who's identified as the rich young ruler. This is a young Jewish man who's very prosperous. He's rich. He's a prominent individual. And as you read Mark the 10th chapter, you have to be impressed with this young man and the respect that he shows to Jesus. The text says that he ran to Jesus and he fell before him and he addresses him as Lord. And he asks him, "What must I do to inherit eternal life?" Now the story goes on to end with a tragic conclusion, and you will remember that when Jesus had finished telling the young man what he must do, that he went away. He was sorrowful. His riches kept him from doing what the Lord told him to do. But you have to appreciate the attitude of this young man as he approached Jesus. And this woman, not a Jew, not one who has been raised in the environment of the Jewish people, but a Canaanite woman comes to him with exactly the same kind of respect towards Jesus as that rich young ruler had. She addresses him in verse 22, "O Lord, Son of David." She even rightly identified him as the descendant of David. Whether she understood all of the implications of that or not, it could very well be that she understood and was acknowledging him to be the Messiah. For the Messiah was said by the prophets. It was said that he was going to be a descendant of King David. And so she's very open and willing to express this. You know, one of the most powerful prayers that anybody can address to God is what she says. "Lord, help me. I know that I speak to numerous people this morning who have found themselves in situations where there's just no place else to go. And the plea, rightly, is, Lord, help me." And I think that's probably where this woman was, that there was just no place else to go. But she knew this was, as I said earlier, perhaps the last opportunity for any kind of hope for her daughter. I will tell you this morning that this society of ours that, as I said before, is in many ways deteriorating right before our eyes, it could be no more greatly helped than by mothers who were willing to acknowledge that Jesus is indeed the Son of David, the Messiah, and who are willing to take the cares and the interest that they have, the well-being of their children, to Him. They do not share that burden alone. And there is nothing that we who are fathers and husbands can do that would be of greater help to our wives and to the mother of our children than to assist them, even to lead them, as the Scriptures speak of the husband's relationship to his wife, to lead them in a way that is directed to Jesus, that will make their determination to go to Him an easier decision to make. There are far too many instances, like that of Kevin Durant, where mothers are left to their own to have to deal with such critical issues of life as this. I don't know what this woman's situation was. Certainly the text mentions no husband. There very well could have been a husband, and that she just came on her own for the welfare of her daughter. But there are just too many cases where women are left totally on their own to have to handle these things. And husbands and fathers, on even a Mother's Day, ought to think seriously about their role in helping and aiding their wife to be the kind of mother that she ought to be. This woman would not be discouraged by even what seemed to be a lack of concern on Jesus' part. At first, he doesn't respond to her at all. And then his own disciples begin to speak against this woman, and they urge Jesus, "Send her away. Well, she's crying out after us. I take it, you know, they're just irritated with the woman. She's a nuisance to them. Maybe she's an embarrassment, attracting attention by her crying out. Whatever the reason, they say, get rid of her. Then Jesus responds, and even in his response to her, he doesn't seem to be willing to assist her in her plea. He says to her, it is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs. And that's a phrase and a response that's perplexed many people. Why? How in the world could Jesus refer to this woman or to her nation of people as being dogs? And it's certainly true that the Jewish attitude towards these people in many ways was just exactly that kind of harsh. But I think we need to understand that when Jesus uses the word dogs here, he uses the word that literally means little dogs, puppies, little household pets. It's not the depiction of a group of people as being, you know, these ravenous scavengers that would wander the city's streets. But it's that tender little fluffy puppy kind of image. But Jesus says it's not fit to take the children's food and give it even to the household pet. And we see once again her persistence in the right way. She doesn't show any disrespect to Jesus in her reply. She doesn't ask him to do anything that's wrong. She doesn't say, oh, but this is my child, set aside what's right. It'll be okay in this instance. But she does reason with him and replies, in fact, that what Jesus had said is right. Yes, that is right. It's not right. It's not proper to take food from the children and give it to the household pets. But, and she states something that every mother knows, that the crumbs that fall from the child's plate, the little pet usually cleans up. That's why they sit right there under the child's seat at the table, because they know where the crumbs are going to come from. And she's just simply saying, is it not right that those of us who are not of the house of Israel yet derive some benefit from the presence of the Son of David? She was a woman who was determined to continue in the right way. And I'll tell you, if you have a mother who has that determination, you need to thank God for it. If you're a mother raising a young child now, or maybe a young woman who anticipates raising children in the future, let this be your determination. You remember the Canaanite woman that many people would have dismissed, that even Jesus' disciples would have dismissed. You don't forget her and her persistence to do what's right. And you do it for the welfare of your child, even if you have to do it alone, without the aid and the encouragement of a husband. You do what is right. And then this woman stands as the example of one who was willing to do what, again, I'm afraid so many are not willing to do today. And that was, she was just willing to accept what Jesus said. She accepted what he said about the crumbs or the food for children not being given to the dogs. There are times when we might feel like contending with the Lord and arguing and saying, oh, but things are different from me. Isn't that true of us in so many different ways? Don't we really think a lot of times things are going to, really, they ought to be different for me. You know, when I'm driving down the road, I don't like the way those folks do this or that or whatever, but I may do exactly the same thing, but it's okay because the circumstances are such and I needed to do this or whatever. We rationalize and think that things can be or should be done differently for us. And how much so when we are talking about the welfare of our children? This woman doesn't do that. She accepts what Jesus said, and then she speaks within the confines of what he has said. In many ways, it reminds me of another mother, Jesus' mother, Mary. You remember the story of when she went to a wedding and Jesus went with her, and they ran out of wine. It was a great social faux pas. And she went to Jesus to appeal for his help. And she instructed the household servants with this statement: whatever he says to you, do it. I think that's the attitude of this woman. She doesn't ask Jesus to do anything that's wrong or that would conflict with his purposes and his intents. But she does appeal to him to act on her behalf within those confines. And that's exactly what is needed in mothers today. Those who will say to their children, when all is said and done, whatever Jesus says to you, do it. Not what I say to you. Not what your father says to you. Not what the preacher says to you. But whatever Jesus says, you do that. And a mother who raises her child in such a way so that they truly devote their life in that fashion to doing what Jesus says is, in the words of Kevin Durant, truly an MVP. Perhaps you've had a mother who has raised you with that kind of encouragement, and you understand what the Lord has said about becoming one of his people. Whatever he says to you, do it. Maybe you've had a mother who has raised you in that way, and you, at some point in your time, lived your life in that fashion, but have since ceased to do so. Whatever he says to you, do it. Maybe you have a mother who raised you completely without any kinds of considerations, such as we talked about today. You need not be that kind of mother. You can be this kind, who will tell your own children, whatever he says to you, do it. Would you today? Would you give your life to the Lord by doing as he has said, to obey him, believing him to be God's son, the son of David as well? Confessing your faith in him and turning from your sins, would you be baptized as he has commanded that you do so? Or having done that and strayed from that kind of devotion to the Lord, would you not come back to him today? Whatever he says to you.